Good morning, friends. This is Lloyd Burlingham reminding you of the service offered you by Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers, Dealers, and your own Skelly Tank Station Man. Alex Dreyer is here with a summary of world news, supplementing his complete reports to you Monday through Friday. I want to talk on the perils of prosperity, and we'll bring you the story of this week's winner of the Skelly Agricultural Achievement Award. Now, Alex Dreyer.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The Germans, throwing heavy reserves of men and machines at the Allied lines below Rome, have again been smashed back. Four assaults in all, constituting the long-awaited full-scale German counterattack, have snapped under the concentration of Allied power. Our beachhead is now 2 weeks old, during which time we have advanced an average of about 6 miles inland. The width of that beachhead is around 20 miles. In that area, just south of the Italian capital, some of the bitterest battles of the Italian campaign are raging. The Germans are determined to make us pay heavily for every yard of advance. The Battle of Italy is to them more than just another campaign. The Nazis look upon our thrust in Italy as the placing of the first Allied nail in Hitler's coffin. And they're right. Just 45 miles to the southeast of our beachhead, Anglo-American forces wedged in between mountains are dislodging Nazis from almost every conceivable kind of pillbox and foxhole, but they are being dislodged. Here in this casino area, German resistance is just as bitter farther to the north. There is the definite realization on the part of the German that his fight must be a prolonged one. Emphasizing that German attitude is the fact that Field Marshal Kesselring, Nazi commander in Italy, is in the field with his men. Behind the cellar-to-cellar to advance, in which the enemy is being dynamited out of fortified buildings, there are the casualties, hitting both sides equally hard. We are losing men, and not just a few men. And the deeper we attempt to penetrate Hitler's fortress, irrespective of what side we may elect to attack, we will be unable to escape that mounting toll of dead, missing, and wounded. The Italian campaign is an intensely difficult struggle. This irrespective of the fact that we have the Germans in some respects on the run. We are advancing, but at a relatively stiff price. Since our invasion of Italy, we have taken more than 10,000 German prisoners. Their arrogance is largely gone, but not their belief in Hitler. As the Nazis desperately try to encircle our forces below Rome, they say they've already done so, German units in Russia's Ukraine are waging a losing struggle in their attempt to break out of a Soviet ring of steel. Already the big tri-motor German Junker planes, the familiar means of aerial traffic initiated by the Nazis at Stalingrad, have made their appearance over the latest Russian trap. It is not yet known whether they are bringing up reserves or whether they are removing high officers and technical non-commissioned personnel. The latter appears to be the more probable. At any rate, those Junker planes are being knocked apart by Soviet fighters and flak. A total of 84 transports have been destroyed during the last 48 hours. And the ring around the trapped divisions has been further tightened. The Russians literally dropped all fighting after the trap had been sprung and started to embrace each other on the field. They were that tickled with the thought of having created another Stalingrad in the making. Captured German field telegrams reveal that the trapped divisions, asking what to do now, have been told to save their necks, and that is all. Well, the German high command appears to be short on advice. Berlin propagandists, again working overtime, are now telling the German people that there is the prospect of an imminent Allied invasion in the West, and that is why the German army is suffering reverses in the East. The double-talking Nazis are obviously beginning to confuse themselves. The steady rumble of Allied planes overhead is adding measurably to that confusion. Already this morning, large formations of Allied bombers with strong fighter escort shot across the channel. That large force, making its fourth consecutive daylight smash, appears to be on the same scale of those which have blasted Wilhelmshaven and Frankfurt in the past 2 days. Last night, Britain's mosquitoes were busy at the task of stinging the Germans again. In the Battle of the Marshals in the Central Pacific, our Marines and Army infantrymen have swept up another batch of islets in the Kwajalein Atoll. The end of enemy resistance on Kwajalein Island itself appears to be but a matter of hours. Admiral Nimitz has already instituted a government of occupation for all of the Marshall Islands. This is the first time since the Spanish-American War that American forces alone have seized enemy territory. Here at home, the Senate will meet today either to provide swift approval or a slow death for the hopes of our fighting forces for a voice in the elections next fall. By the time the fall rolls around, there will be around 11 million persons in uniform. The people in uniform want to vote. Of that, there is no doubt. And if anyone has the right to vote, it is the man or woman shaping our nation's destiny on the fighting fronts of this global struggle. And now, here's Lloyd Burlingham with the vital news from the farm front.
A month ago, I read an article in Country Gentleman titled, Perils of Prosperity. Perils of Prosperity. That's something all of us in this farming business can face bravely, I thought. At least we'd like to take the chance. And so I filed what Lloyd Partain had written as something to be concerned about a long time from now, if ever. Now I'm not so sure. The gross income of the average American farm in 1943 was about $4,500. That counts all income that earned on the farm and off and is gross, not net. There's nothing so perilous about the amount, even though it is the greatest in farming industry. Multiplied by our total number of farms, however, it does look a little different, for it becomes the tremendous figure of $26 billion. Paul Terhune here in Chicago has tried to visualize that great volume of money. Translated into $20 gold pieces and the coins stacked one on top of the other, he says it would reach up into the sky more than 2,000 miles. The $26 billion is gross income. Net income was about $12.5 billion. But the surplus, after all expenses for living, interest, taxes, everything are subtracted, is between $5 and $6 billion. Partain, who works for the United States Treasury, was once an Oklahoma farm boy and is trained in agriculture. He says the 1943 income of the farming industry is enough to do a very great deal of good, or possibly considerable harm. He's thinking about inflation and what it could do again to farmers. Here are his proposals. That this 1943 net income be used to replace and repair equipment, fix up buildings and rebuild soil. That part be set aside to increase operating capital, to tide the farm enterprise over rough spots ahead, and to reduce outstanding debts. Partain proposes that, so far as it can be managed, this is the time to afford conveniences and improvements for the farm home, also to get set for such future expenses as doctor and hospital bills and college training for the children. He recommends insurance and urges buying war loan bonds. One of the chief perils of our current farm prosperity, as seen by the writer, and a million farmers will agree with him promptly, is that of buying land at too high a price. The article ends there, and it leaves the question, shall I buy a farm now or add to the acres I already own? With an answer which is a question. Before you put money in land, he suggests you figure out the answer to this one. Will this land make good for me when prices on farms are 50% of what they are today? Well, I still prefer the perils of a 1943 net income on farms of $12.5 billion to those of another kind, which flooded farm homes when net income was down to $2 billion. But I'm glad to have gone back to Partain's very useful warnings. It is important that we prove ourselves as capable economists in times of prosperity, as we have in the past when the going was tough.
Well, Lloyd, I think I could face the perils of prosperity and be pretty brave about it. But I've seen the aftermath of such inflation as America's never known. I'm no farm expert, but booming land prices bringing on inflation in agriculture could do a great deal of harm.
One of Lloyd Partain's suggestions fits right in with the need to take special care of farm motors and equipment, buying replacement and repairs where necessary and where possible, and keeping every machine, new and old, in the best possible condition. That's a good investment of money in any kind of times. This season, there's special advantage to you in using the service offered you by your Skelly tank station man or Skelly jobber. See him for high-quality Skelly gasoline, tractor fuels, kerosene, and fortified Tagaline heavy-duty motor oils and greases. Skelly lubrication conserves motors. Your Skell gas dealer has bottled gas in steel cylinders for cooking, heating water, and refrigeration beyond the gas mains. Well, more than a century ago, a pioneer set his plow in the virgin Hawkeye soil at Iowa City and headed his yoke of oxen north and east toward the Mississippi. His furrow set the course for the old military road angling across the gently rolling prairies to Dubuque. Near where the oxen crossed the Cedar River, a stagecoach stop, known as St. Mary's, was set up. The traffic flowing along the road these very many years has not changed more in the shift from oxen to today's cars and trucks than as the stagecoach stop became famous as Wayside Farm. Fine shorthorn cattle were bred there. Always a stock farm, you'll find it easiest now by asking in Mount Vernon. That isn't the name, not officially. Milo Walraub is too modest for that. When he does so dignify the 271 acres he rents, the name will likely be Chapel View Farm. For from an east window, you can look across to the old chapel building of Cornell College in Mount Vernon. Milo and Mary Walraub are partners in maintaining the proudest traditions of old St. Mary's. Their helpers are Joan, 10, Mike, 6, and Vincent, 4. Starting from scratch, the Walraubs have built up a substantial farm business so that now, with no other help than 19-year-old George Cadlick, they produce great quantities of food, serve their community well, and do a fine job of living. Crops in 1943 included 90 acres of corn to be stepped up to 170 this year, 15 acres of soybeans, 50 this year, 15 of oats and 30 of hay. 150 hogs marketed totaled 18 tons of pork. 400 hens provided over 4,500 dozen eggs and 600 birds were sold. 150 head of beef cattle are fed annually. That calls for a lot of work. And Mary Walraub keeps her house, cares for the three youngsters, drives the tractor in rush times, hauls feed with the truck, and keeps the records on the excellent herds of purebred Berkshires and Angus. Berkshires are the Walraub's biggest business. They started with crossbreds, using Berkshire boars on Duroc sows. From there, they worked into registered Berkshires, starting with a $200 sow selected most carefully. And now there are Berks all over the place, good ones. The Angus herd is founded on two heifers that Milo Walraub raised as a 4-H clubber. The main cattle project so far is Hereford Feeders. This is a hustling, bustling, go-ahead place where food production in the greatest possible quantities is the thing. Yet there's time for outside interests. Milo Walraub was a 4-H club leader for 6 years. He works with the Farm Bureau and the Angus and Berkshire Associations, and with Mrs. Walraub, is active in the Lisbon Catholic Church. The Walraubs, beside prodigious service on the food front, have helped in bond and scrap metal drives. And now today, in recognition of this very fine record, the Committee of Awards declares Milo Walraub winner of the Skelly Agricultural Achievement Award.
Well, Lloyd, I'd like to add my congratulations to those of the committee, commending the Walraubs, Milo, Mary, Joan, Mike, and Vincent. And you know, Lloyd, someday I'd like to see Chapel View Farm.
Thank you, Alex. I wish you could. I will. That's my home stamping ground. This morning, at the farm, personal representatives of Mr. Skelly will present the Agricultural Achievement Award to Milo Walraub. The award including a $100 war bond, a colorful achievement pennant, a gold lapel pin, and a beautiful scroll. Next Saturday at this same time, another W.G. Skelly Agricultural Achievement Award will be made. Meantime, take advantage of the service offered you by your Skelly tank station man. He'd like to be of help to you. He can make your motors last longer and serve you better. He's a good man to know.
Listen, Lloyd, you really think you can fix it up for me to see that farm?
Well, Alex, I think I can. That's out near where I grew up. I'll be glad to take you to a really good farm.
Because that's what I need is a farm.
That's what we'll get you. Folks, listen to Alex Dreyer in the next news analysis of day all through this next week, Monday through Friday. This is Lloyd Burlingham saying goodbye now until next Saturday.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.